In a week where I happen to be on vacation, the world was kind of turned upside down by the announcement earlier in the week that 1.2 billion passwords were stolen by Russian hackers. And we've been talking about how that's been debunked to a great extent. Richard Steenen is with us. He's our favorite expert to talk about all things security. Also with us in studio is Nicole Johnson, who is a cybersecurity expert with Cisco. And Gary Baker and Ed Brudel are in studio as well. Richard, you have an article that we linked to on our homepage. It's entitled, "Is Russia Poised to Retaliate Against Sanctions with Cyber Attacks?" And from my perusal of this, it seems like you're saying that there is a very real Russian threat out there and a very organized one. So would you talk about that and what that retaliation might be?
Yeah, it's well known in the research community that the Russians are the very, very best at hacking, right? They're the ones that create these botnets that attack banks and steal credit card information and all the rest. But for years and years, they have really contained themselves to just attacking, you know, things that will pay them back. You know, so they've been making a lot of money all this time, extremely well organized. And then historically, there's some connection to the KGB, and that the founders of this Russian business networks were all former KGB agents.
Now, stop, but hang on just a second. The Russian business network, tell me about that, because I saw that and I thought, well, it's like a chamber of commerce, right?
Yeah. Well, these guys created some of the first marketplaces for malware. So they create new vulnerabilities and exploits and then sell them, or even kind of have a managed service where you would use them, they take care of collecting the money and distributing
it. Wow, they commercialized hacking in that sense.
Yeah, and then they went silent. You know, they stopped branding themselves as the RBN. Mm-hmm. But the hacking never went away. So we've had cybercrime growing into probably a multi-billion-dollar industry. And there's always been this question, well, how come they don't engage in, you know, the Russia versus the West kind of stuff that you see sniping going on the Internet?
Yeah.
In talking to two separate researchers, they told me that they're picking up on chatter that they've been reined in specifically by the Kremlin, who's barred them, told them, you know, it's okay to do all this hacking for money, but don't get involved in hacking for political reasons, like Anonymous and the rest of those hackers.
Okay.
So it was just the week before last that they started to hear that if sanctions reach a certain threshold, we don't know what that is, Russia could retaliate by unleashing the hacker swarm on the West. And my suspicion is that because they're so good at banking hacking that it would be against the financial system.
Wow. So two things strike me about that. First of all, I guess I've always painted China as the big cyber bully. Or I should say the bushwhacker that's out there,
yep.
You know, kind of doing the terror kind of things. But you're saying that in reality, it's been the Russians all along who were the real sharpshooters.
Yeah, they're the ones that get, you know, these guys that deal with cyber attacks every day. Actually, they when they talk about them, they are fearful because of the level of sophistication and ability to do harm if they so choose.
If they ever unleash that kind of... Nicole, are you with Cisco, are you hearing this in terms of the corporate levels that you're working with?
Definitely. I don't think these Russian hackers are trying to get to my personal Facebook, right? Not a lot of valuable monetary things there, but definitely from the corporate side, we're not facing hackers that are in their dorm room. I mean, this is a organized, often government involvement type thing. I mean, these are professionals, so you have to defend in new ways because they're always morphing and evolving the types of attacks.
So what I'm hearing you saying, Richard, is that the Russians are saying, look, if you put any more pressure on us about Lithuania or things that are going on there, that we're liable to let these guys go and just have at it with your business. Could we see them going after the infrastructure as well?
If you think about so far they're taking sanctions, you know, they're retaliating in a tit for tat, mm-hmm. and they've barred imports of Western food into Russia, which sounds more like shooting yourself in the foot than anything else.
Yeah.
But when the geopolitical situation gets to the point where it's an acceptable loss of faith and methodologies and tools and vulnerabilities, to cause havoc in banking systems. The banks are, you know, applying the sanctions that restrict the money movement of some of these oligarchs.
How prepared are you? You deal with corporations around the globe. How prepared are the banks to deal with that kind of heavy artillery being aimed at them?
It varies by bank. Some are extremely well prepared. Some are not prepared at all. It'll just devastate them.
Wow. Could this be the infrastructure, too, like electricity and water and gas? And I mean, can we see them coming, you know, at mainland America, you know, onto our shores, if you will, and going after those basics as well?
I think that would be an escalation. I think, this is a lot like warfare in that responses have to be proportional and like. So financial sanctions turn into financial attacks. If we started shutting off, you know, power and utilities in Russia, which, you know, they have all the power they need, then you'd see that sort of proportional response.
You know, there's been a lot said about the Internet of Things, right? And the ability for me to use my my smartphone to turn on and off my my lights, to turn up or down my thermostat.
Right.
Are they subject to bugs and viruses and hacking?
Yeah,
what would they want?
I don't know if Russian hackers would attack those because that would be a lot of, you know, small attacks against people's homes. And you're even at Black Hat, they're demonstrating how easy it is to turn a Nest thermostat or a smoke alarm into a spyware, essentially grabbing your information.
My thermostat is spying on me. Yeah.
I think one thing, I talk a lot about the Internet of Things to corporations, and one thing is for sure, the Internet of Things connects more things. It brings things to life and brings them into the connectivity that we didn't have before. And with that comes risk because you have an increased attack surface, and that's what you've got to look at. So with so many more mobile devices and so many more sensors being able to talk and connect, that gives more access to them for attacks and, you know,
I spent the week in Amish country, Richard. I'm thinking of heading back there. I'm wondering, have you seen among your colleagues, after coming back from something like Black Hat, who say, you know, I think I'll disconnect a few more things?
As a matter of fact, a keynote was delivered by Dan Geer, kind of a, you know, old guy of security. Mm-hmm. And he said he's reevaluating his dependencies, he called them, just because he might have to get along without them.
Wow. Now, this is in terms of, you know, things that are plugged in or just things that are networked more than that?
Things that are plugged in and your own reliance on email for communication and voice over IP for phone and your smartphone for location services. All these things you rely on today. What if you didn't have them tomorrow? Would you still be able to operate your business or your life?
You know, I was just cleaning out my trunk a couple days ago, and I found this old Michigan map back there, and I'm like, why do I keep this in here? And because I have GPS on my smartphone, and I'm like, maybe I shouldn't have thrown that out.
I just did that.
Get some maps.
You know, it's funny. I just did the same thing. We were about to take off for this vacation, and I was going through the car kind of getting things ready for it, and I had a fistful of old maps that are in you know, the usual beat-up kind of shape. I thought, why do I need that? I got Waze.
Yeah, exactly.
to navigate me around. Richard Steenan is with us, by the way. He was at Black Hat this past week, and also in studio with us, we have Nicole Johnson. Richard,
I was just going to ask, what was the biggest aha out there at Black Hat?
Yeah, good question.
Yeah, so I have a different perspective than a lot of people, since I don't attend a lot of presentations, but I, you know, get a feel of what's showing on the show floor.
Mm-hmm.
And enterprises, or the solutions for enterprises, businesses, have, since RSA of this year, have been addressing this issue of reducing the mean time to respond to an attack.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all, you know, technically the solutions are there to detect pretty sophisticated attacks. But the response could take, you know, hours or days in some cases. And, of course, VeriSign reports, you know, the average response time is 270 days.
Oh, wow.
So there's several solutions I've seen that now, that once you've detected the attack, it's pretty much push button to, you know, inform the firewall to shut off the command and control access and quarantine the machine that's infected and schedule it for being re-imaged and do all that with the existing change control procedures automated as well.
Wow.
And that's really the reason not being able to detect is really the reason it's taking so long, right? They don't even know they're infected a lot of times.
Richard, we're going to come back in just a second. I want to hear some more of your insights from Black Hat. Tell people a little bit more about what Black Hat is. And then I want to wrap things up, guys, around the table here, talking about how do we practically make ourselves more secure in this highly insecure world. Back in just a moment with Richard Steen and here on the Internet Advisor.